Desikiraju, Raju, thank you so much for inviting me to this beautiful Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore. It's a real pleasure to be back with you again.
Thank you, Abhijit. It's a pleasure to have you here at the Indian Institute of Science. And yes, it is indeed a pleasure to talk to you again after the recent podcast. But now I am seeing you live.
Yes.
And I understand that this is also a bit of a novelty for you.
It is a novelty for me because I've never done an in-person live podcast ever. So it's a first time for me also.
There is a first time for everything.
Indeed, sir. It's no better place to do a first time than this.
That's for you to say, not me.
Yeah, for me, it's a wonderful experience. What a beautiful place it is. So let's talk about the Indian Institute of Science, which is, I mean, the premier institution for science in India. So what's the history like?
History is very interesting indeed, Abhijit. Behind us, you see the statue of this great man, J.N. Tata, mm-hmm. and who was one of the people instrumental in setting up this institute. And this is well known. I mean, he was in a ship traveling from Yokohama to California. Mm-hmm. And one of his co-passengers in the ship was Swami Vivekananda.
I see.
And so these two gentlemen got to talking with each other. And Swamiji had some ideas about starting a place for the higher education mm-hmm. of students. And in his words, he said a place where young men can lead an austere life.
Austere life.
Austere, yeah. This is, look at that word, austere. Mm-hmm. Austere life while they pursue higher goals and things. Mm-hmm. And Tata was already in his mind, he had an idea of starting a top class Indian university. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do that and he had been talking about it for some time. Now this was the late 19th century,
okay.
I think 1895 or 96, something of that sort. Mm-hmm. And so then he put up a small committee with a gentleman called Burjorji Padsha.
Okay.
Who was an educationist mm-hmm. in Bombay at that time. And then they started getting some ideas about where to start, how to start and so on. Mm-hmm. Please remember that we were at the height of the colonial regime in those
yes.
days.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people actually went and sought an appointment with Lord Curzon, mm-hmm. who had just then been appointed as a viceroy. And but I mean, all ideas are good and so on and so on. And people were thinking like this. Mm-hmm. But you need money. You
yes.
need money and you need a place to set things up.
Yes.
There was some decision about Bangalore also.
Okay.
To my understanding. Mm-hmm. I think Roorkee was mentioned.
I see.
Bombay itself was mentioned. Mm-hmm. Many of Tata's friends said, why don't you do it in Bombay?
Okay.
So for various reasons, he decided in Bangalore. But I think the main reason was that this vast campus, mm-hmm. I believe it is something like 471 acres, 16 guntas of
okay.
land
mm-hmm.
was given for this project
okay.
by the Dowager Maharani of Mysore state.
Okay.
Now, this is an extraordinary lady mm-hmm. who was forced to act as regent mm-hmm. when she was younger than 30 because the death of her husband, mm-hmm. Chamaraja Vadiyar, at the age of 30 or 31.
I see.
In Calcutta. And so she had a minor son, mm-hmm. actually two minor sons on her hands. Mm-hmm. And so she became the regent and was ruling on behalf of her son.
Okay.
So the story goes that the then Diwan of Mysore, Seshadri Iyer, mm-hmm. he approached her and said, you know, madam, this is this proposal that J.N. Tata is putting up, and you know, he mentioned I think something about Vivekananda and so on.
Okay.
And the story goes that she asked him, what do they want? Mm-hmm. So he said that this, they want a land to start. And I believe in less than a minute, she said, how about that piece of land here in this particular location?
I see.
And you give it to them.
Wow.
That's it. That's the whole decision making. So I want especially young viewers of this program podcast mm-hmm. to see that when you have highly moral and honest leaders,
yes.
whether it's Seshadri Iyer or this Dowager queen. Mm. And I think her name is so little heard or mentioned.
I see.
That I think I should spell it out. It's a very, very long name. You know, Maharani was called, what is it? Kempa Nanjamani Vani Vilasa Sannidhana. That was her full name.
I see.
And commonly known as Maharani Vani Vilasa.
Okay.
In Mysore, Bangalore and all these places. Hmm. And her son, of course, was the great king to be Krishnaraja Vadiyar the fourth.
Okay.
So he is the person who is normally known as Rajarishi and so on and so on.
Okay.
And you think about the institute, the way it started, the fortunes of the Mysore royals and this institute mm-hmm. is very closely tied up. And in this day and age when, you know, so many people talk about so many different things, this, that and the other, mm-hmm. Please remember that when the rulers are forward looking, I would use the word dharmic even.
Yes.
When the rulers are like this, then the institutions are bound to prosper.
Yes.
And the subsequent history also goes, you see, Jayan Tata died before the project could even be sanctioned and started.
I see.
But the successor was Dorab Tata, mm-hmm. his son. And Maharani also passed on the kingdom to Krishnaraja Vadiyar. This
okay.
was about 10 years later. Mm-hmm. And Vivekananda also passed away by this time. But then you see, he also had a successor in the form of Sister Nivedita.
Yes.
Now, Sister Nivedita was an English woman, mm-hmm. as you know. And so she had lots of influence. So something like this obviously cannot be started without the active support or at least cooperation of the British government.
Yes.
So she introduced Dorab Tata to influential people in London.
Okay.
And so they started lobbying for this. Mm-hmm. And so with all this plus that Lord Curzon and everything, by 1908 the charter was given.
Okay.
And almost immediately they started building this grand building which we are facing right now.
Right.
And so then the whole thing got started. So you see there were originally three people, mm-hmm. Jayan Tata, Maharani, Vivekananda.
Three people.
And then you get them, then next generation Maharaja, Dorab Tata and Sister Nivedita.
Right.
So you see these six people, if you ask me, were really responsible for the beginning of this place. And there's another thing, point Abhijit, which mm-hmm. is very important to remember, that when the whole thing is set up in an honest and moralistic way, mm-hmm. it will stand the test of time.
Right.
You don't need fancy governments and fancy policies and things being announced here and there. This whole thing took 5 minutes to sanction.
Indeed, yes.
And it has lasted now almost 120 years.
Right.
So many generations of people have come and gone.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, it just goes to show that when the thing is started properly, again and again I use the word honest. And I mean honest in the highest sense. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I find, I have been in this institute for about 15 years now. Mm-hmm. Having spent a major portion of my career earlier in University of Hyderabad. But the last 15 years, I mean, I know this institute very well because my family hails from these parts.
I see.
So, this is not a strange place for me even before I came here. And certainly we are connected with people in Mysore and so we know people from the royal family and so on and so on. So it's not that this is a new stuff for me. Mm-hmm. But I would once again say because of these high traditions set up, everybody in this institute from the sweeper to the director feels that this institute is bigger than them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this again is another unique place in India scientific institution wise. Where the institution is much, much bigger than the people who lead it.
Right.
The institution has got inherent institutional strength.
I see.
So that nobody who is privileged enough to get into these portals mm-hmm. feels like abusing that privilege.
I see.
So we all feel that there is something called the institute tradition, the institute way of doing things, mm-hmm. that certain things are not done in certain ways. Because this happens to be IISc.
I see.
This is very much rooted here and it's very unusual in India.
Very unusual.
Where you find, you know, various institutions set up with large amounts of public money, mm. subject to the whims and caprices of vice chancellors, directors, they come and go.
Yes.
You know, you have a director, he wants to be called a professor. Mm. Then a professor is there who wants to become called a director.
I see.
This is not the spirit in which educational institutions should be run.
It's not about them.
I don't believe so.
Yes, yes.
And when you see this refreshing change in a place like this, matching the beautiful climate and building, mm-hmm. I think that sort of gives you a sort of feeling for the history of this place. But why don't we just try to walk in to the institute and just see a few of the buildings.
Yes.
Here, and a little more of the sense of history of this place, we will probably be able to
absolutely
appreciate in that way.
Yes, sir. So this is the first building of the institute, right?
Yeah, I think it was the first building. I think there were some ad hoc buildings.
Okay, initially there must have been.
This thing came up. I mean, the entire institute was in this building.
To my understanding,
there were two departments and two departments only.
Okay.
One was called General and Applied Chemistry.
Okay.
And that was somewhere there.
Right.
You know, the other one, interestingly, was called Electrical Technology. And that was somewhere here.
I see.
I was told that the library was on this ground floor thing. I am not 100% sure about that.
Okay.
The whole thing was there, and then there were two heritage buildings. Chemistry subsequently moved there to the eastern side, and electrical technology moved this side and then became called physics.
Physics.
That was the institute.
I see.
For about 20-30 years.
So how many buildings do we have today?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know. Most of these 400 acres are well built up.
Okay.
And of course, they've left a lot of lung space in the form of these beautiful gardens.
Yes.
Which blend really nicely with the whole atmosphere. But
yes.
I think we should go into the main building.
Right.
Which is also called today the central office.
Central office.
Uh-huh, yes.
I see. So now it's the administrative headquarters?
Yes.
I see.
It is the seat of administration of the institute.
Right.
And you see that bust over there?
Yes.
He is Krishnaraja Wadiyar the IV.
I see.
The son of the Maharani who gave the land.
I see.
So, he was a tremendous person and responsible for so many positive things in Mysore state.
I see.
I mean, we were one of the first to get electricity in this country.
I see.
Thanks to the Diwan, Sir M. Vishweshwaraya. I told you, no? First Diwan was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the governing council of IISc.
I see.
And it was he who named that building electrical technology.
I see.
He didn't call it physics or something like that. So the idea, this is itself such a bold idea for 1908, that you start with something with an application oriented.
Indeed, yes.
Today, you know, I find I have been in Indian science now for 40 plus years, almost 45 years.
Yes.
So this whole idea that we have to have some places where you have some pure science going on and everything outside that is impure, this is, I think, a totally wrong way, fallacious way of looking at it.
It is, yes.
Science is science, and in the end, you can't divorce science from technology.
It has to be applied to technology.
Vishweshwaraya started this Jogfal, Sharavati, all these projects. And another thing which he started, I must mention, since we are in the institute, is he realized, and Maharaja realized by then, that these, after World War I, they had a large number of logs.
Logs?
Logs from sandalwood trees.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they had some low-level export of this. This is one of the few geographical areas where the sandalwood tree grows properly.
Okay.
And so they used to export, and then they couldn't export in World War I, so they were stuck with all this.
Okay.
So then they wanted to figure out if something can be done with these logs.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got a very good chemist onto the faculty of IISc.
Okay.
I forget his name exactly, but he is the one who suggested to them that you could take these logs and extract something from them called sandal oil.
Sandal oil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that if those of you who have seen a bit of the sandalwood tree, sandal bark actually, if you rub it and so on with a little bit of water, you get the beautiful smell of sandalwood.
Yes.
So they, using a process called steam distillation, which is well known in chemistry, they could get this sandal oil.
Okay.
And in the far southern corner of this campus, they started this small steam distillation unit.
Okay.
And they started extracting this sandal oil. Now, one of the things you can do with oil of any type is that you can make soap out of it.
Saponification.
Saponification, correct. Yes. That is the correct technical word you have used.
Yes.
Now, sapon is
soap.
The Latin word for, yeah.
Soap. Savon in French.
Savon in French, yes.
Yes.
And actually, sabbu in some of the South Indian languages.
Yes.
So it's not etymologically, they're probably all related.
It is, yeah.
So then they decided to make, and this was the origin of Mysore sandal soap.
I see, yes.
Which now, by the way, is a profit-making industry even today.
I see.
And there are some of us who swear by this soap and don't use anything else.
I see.
And so this is the whole thing started, and then the factory became so profitable that Maharaja decided to move the factory to Mysore.
Okay.
Which is where it is housed. But there is still a large place in Bangalore where they are doing some of this.
So it originated here?
It originated in this campus, IISc.
So amazing.
Mysore sandal. So once again, you say the industry has come first.
Yes, yeah.
So slowly the science will... See, the thing is, this whole lopsided thing today that first you have to sit, start doing science, write some papers and then get the papers recognized in some foreign country. And then only if the foreigner says that the papers are good, then they are good.
Yes, it doesn't
make
sense.
This whole thing, you see, this colonial thing.
Mindset.
Brainwashing,
yeah.
Mindset.
Yes, yes.
It is now the ruination of Indian scientists today.
It is, yes.
It is really. And
it
so
is.
When you see people like Seshadri Iyer and Visveshwaraya and Maharani and Maharaja, they had these right ideas.
They had their ideas at that
with
time.
With our present chaps in Delhi, Bangalore, all these places.
They lack.
Zero.
Yes. Yes, agree.
Zero.
Yes.
Because they worry more about following the rules. This tells me about following the rules.
Okay.
And we'll go, before I talk about this, the first director of this place was an Englishman.
Okay.
And the first 2, 3, 4 directors were English people.
Okay.
So we'll go to a special room
yes.
where some special English people's photographs are still put up.
Let's take a look.
Yes. Now this, let's take some time to look at these pictures. This is the council room of the Indian Institute of Science.
Okay.
And very few people are allowed to come into this room.
I see.
So the viewers of the program, look carefully and see all the things. There's a whole history of the institute here. This is Maharaja, of course. This is Krishnaraja Vadiyar IV, and was also called Rajarishi.
Rajarishi.
Because he was... I mean, the whole system of roads, railways, you know.
Enlightened rule, right?
There is a story that when Mahatma Gandhi first came to Bangalore for his first public lecture,
okay,
he was especially nervous. And after giving the lecture, he went away to Nandi Hills, which is near the today's Bangalore airport.
Okay.
So they asked him, the people asked him, why are you so nervous about this Bangalore lecture. So he said, I believe, he says, Maharaja is ruling the state so well and the people are so happy that I was scared that they may not want any change and that they may not want independence.
I see.
And he got a very positive response from the crowd.
Okay.
And then he said he was felt greatly relieved.
Okay.
He said, if the people of Mysore want independence, then he says, then there is no doubt that this freedom movement will take root in this country.
I see.
So for him, Mysore was a test case.
It was the acid test.
It was for him the acid test.
Right.
And 1920 or 1921, I think was the time when he came and gave a public address in Bangalore.
I see.
So that is Maharaja.
Right.
And this of course is the first president, Rajendra Prasad.
Yes.
And I think he was a member of the council or something. In the beginning, there is some, he is not put here simply because he is president of India.
I see.
There is some connection with, because all the other presidents are not here, only he is here.
Yes.
Now look at this. This is an autographed photo of Queen Mary.
Queen Mary.
Yes.
I see.
I told you some interesting photos of some interesting English people are here. And the picture still hangs.
Yes.
Which means we are respectful of history.
We are, history has to be
I mean, finally it was 1911 was the year of the Darbar, no?
Yes, it was.
And it was just at that time when the institute was started functioning.
I see.
So, it was very appropriate. The whole thing was finally done in their name. Because don't forget that the working expenses, this is another interesting point. The Mysore royals gave not only the land but also for running expenses.
I see.
The original figures, I seem to remember, was that for running expenses, they gave 50,000 a year.
50,000 rupees a year.
Rupees a year.
At that time.
That time, mm-hmm. Tata gave 1.25 lakhs per year.
I see.
And the British government gave 75,000 per year.
I see.
That sum of these three numbers was the running expense of the institute.
Okay.
Additionally, for the capital expense, Tata gave 1/3 of his fortune.
1/3 of his entire fortune.
He divided his fortune into three. 1/3 for one son, 1/3 for the second son, and 1/3 for IAS.
Wow, I see.
So that is that.
One has to appreciate that.
Excuse me? I know. I mean, today we've got so many magnates and this and that.
Yes.
Would any of these chaps give 1/3 of their fortune to start one education institution?
I don't think so.
King George, again a signed photo.
Hmm.
Okay.
Right.
There have been some comments, by the way, I should tell you.
Okay.
As to why these portraits are hanging here, etc., etc.
I see.
And then the institute has quite rightly maintained that all this is part of our heritage.
It's part of our history, yes.
I mean, one shows it without any, you know, we're proud of all these people who have been directly or indirectly responsible. And see, I'm mentioning these numbers because there is another rumor going about that Tata gave all the money for the running expenses and the British government gave almost nothing.
Okay.
So that's why I'm telling the numbers. Mysore Royals 50,000, Tata 1.25 lakhs, British government 75,000.
I see. Per year.
Per year.
Right.
In addition, the Mysore Darbar gave 5 lakhs as a capital grant to start things going.
Okay.
And one more thing, talking about the, we'll come to the directors there, I think. This, I believe, is William Ramsay, if I am not mistaken.
Okay.
Very famous British chemist.
Okay.
Who was on the first board which was conceiving the plan. Ramsay was a very famous chemist. He discovered the rare gases.
Okay.
Like neon, krypton, etc.
I see.
And I do believe he got a Nobel Prize for that.
I see.
So he sent his one of his good students, Maurice Travers, as the first director of this institute.
I see.
And Travers was an interesting chap. And he was so committed to the institute. And one point of time, they were running out of money to build this building.
Okay.
He took a personal loan of 2 lakhs. He took a personal loan of 2 lakhs to complete the construction.
I see.
And then got into a fight with Burjorji Patsha, who told him this is against the rules.
I see.
See, once again, this tussle between a visionary scientist who is totally honest, and an honest bureaucrat who has wants to follow the rules honestly.
Right.
So you see, honest people can also fight with honest people.
Yes.
About money.
Right, right.
And this raises an interesting point, because this is a very relevant point in India today. You know, this was also the, we don't have time to talk about this today, but the whole tussle that one of the subsequent directors of this place, C.V. Raman.
Okay.
Had with the institute management, and which then led to his moving out of the institute.
I see.
Yes, he was appointed director after his Nobel Prize.
I see.
And still after that, there were people who fought with him, which means Nobel laureates were not viewed as some demigods.
In those days.
In those days.
Yes.
Quite correctly. Today, if it's a Nobel laureate, people think, like that.
Yes, yes.
That he is God or he has come from heaven or something like
that. Yes.
Nothing of the sort.
Right.
They're just ordinary people like you and me,
yes,
who had some extra vision or happened to find something long before others realized it.
Yes.
That's the only difference between Nobel laureates and the rest of us.
Yes.
That's what I find, since I know quite a few of them now, at least
right.
in my subject. So I can say that. But, you know, coming back to Patsha and Travers, they're a constant thing.
Okay.
Should you follow the rules? The so-called today, all these famous departments, DST, CSIR, various government ministries, they're always telling us, you know, this is not as per this rule, this is not as per that particular notification, where is the thing, provide the justification for that, L1, cheapest quotation.
I see.
What cheapest quotation did Patsha, did Travers take when he took the 2 lakhs loan?
Yes.
And still this building is standing.
Yes.
Without any leak or anything. Some of the buildings built according to all our government rules are leaking today.
Yes, unfortunately.
So you please see that, I mean.
Yes, yes. It is, these are facts.
This, of course, is the great man. This is J.N. Tata.
Yes.
And this is Burjorji Patsha.
I see.
So, who was the conscience keeper.
I see.
Of this institute.
Yes.
And his role is often underestimated.
I see.
Like the Maharani. So these are all some of the, you know, heroes, unsung heroes.
I see.
Of this place.
Right.
So anyway, take a good look at the council room because, you know, I'm glad we've been given the permission to come here and film a little bit inside.
So what's happened here historically?
Historically, the meetings of the council,
okay,
which is the supreme executive authority of the place.
I see.
And nowadays, with the permission of the director, in certain meetings that the director chairs are held here.
Okay.
But things have to be at a certain level before a meeting is
Held here.
Held over.
I see.
It's not just any old room that I'm taking.
So this is hallowed ground in the institute.
Hallowed ground, and there are very many people, I guess, especially students and so on, who come to this place, who have never been inside this room.
I see.
Oh yes. This is not really a public viewing place.
I see.
In that sense. So I hope they don't come and catch us afterwards and say, why did you film
Well, thank you for giving us the permission to film here.
Yeah, chalo, let's go outside. You asked about the old buildings on either side. We'll just take a peep at the General and Applied Chemistry building.
Absolutely.
Which is actually the oldest department. I'm a chemistry person.
Myself, of course.
So there's some vested interest in
showing. Let's do that, sir. Let's do that.
Chalo.
No. It's like a palm, right?
Correct. It's like a finger catching this.
So that one is the heritage.
That is chemistry. One of the two buildings are identical.
Okay. Exactly.
General and Applied Chemistry there. And
electrical technology.
And electrical technology on that side.
Right.
So Raman was housed in that building.
I see.
And his chaps in, his enemies in chemistry were housed here.
Enemies, did they have?
Yeah, they had good kusti.
I see.
Again, it had to do with financial matters.
Okay. Okay.
Raman simply said, a job has to be done. Mm-hmm. I have to spend this money quickly. Otherwise, yes, this job will not get done at the correct time.
Yes.
So he simply took the money and started spending.
Okay.
So then this, these fellows started telling him, no, you're not allowed to do this.
Procedure.
You have to follow the rules, L1, yes, L2, L3, whatever they talk.
I see.
So the same thing. Mm. So again and again, this problem has come back to haunt us.
Mm. Bureaucracy and red tape.
Somewhere I tell you, Abhijit, Indian science is not going to take off if the present science bureaucracy of this country, and by this bureaucracy I mean all the science departments, the ministers, everything, they have to shed this. Scientists that way are not ordinary people.
They're not.
They're really not. You know, in fact, I tell so many of my students who want to get into a research career, look, young man or young lady, this science is not a career meant for everybody.
Yeah.
You may do a PhD. But that simply means that you have learned some research methodology.
Yes.
An actual life in academics is something very different.
It is, yes.
And it is, unless you, I don't want to use the word crazy, but you have to be able to think about things in certain different ways.
You have to be obsessed with science.
You have to be obsessed with science. You have to be willing to take risks, you know.
Yes. Yes.
You have to be, at certain sense, I don't want to use the word gambler again.
No.
But there has to be some considered gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Because if something is known, then it's not research anymore.
It's not research.
I mean, how did Raman actually, how did he discover this business which is called Raman scattering?
Yes.
Which then made him, you know, world famous and so on.
Yes.
He had a hunch.
Mm-hmm.
Others had done certain things. He found some gaps. And then he came to this situation, and then Fut, one thing followed the other.
Yes.
And then there, eureka, there was the result.
Yes.
And so scientists are a little different. And
yes,
we are very, very different. Most of the times we can't even understand administrators.
Yes.
We don't understand them, which is why this whole business of a scientist or some professor going and sitting in Delhi as some secretary of this and that is, to my mind, slightly ludicrous.
It is.
Because very often these people who were, you know, good scientists, okay scientists, then they go there in some regime which they don't understand. So somewhere, I think somehow at the highest level, we have to rethink this whole equation of science and science administration.
Absolutely.
Do we need this much administration of science?
Right.
Do we need? Or are the administrators so worried about the fact that all scientists would be stealing all the money and, you know, having some fun with it.
What fun will they have?
The Bhurjorji Padshah had the same problem with Maurice Travers.
Okay.
The chemistry department fellows here had the same problem with Raman on that side.
I see.
Now, here is the building. This is the heritage building. It used to be called the Inorganic and Physical Chemistry.
Okay.
And now, very sadly, we have all moved into the ultra-modern chemistry building on the other end of the campus.
I see.
But there are calls to, you know, use this heritage building properly and try to use it as a science museum or something for citizen science.
I see.
Or something else, because this is all part of history.
Yes.
Science history. And, you know, I have visited 30, 40 countries in the world, scientific institutions mostly. Then I find the affectionate care and almost love that they show towards their old buildings, their old history and so on.
Yes.
You know.
And we don't have that.
We don't have that. You know something? You will be shocked if I tell you this. The famous lab in North Calcutta in Bau Bazar, where C.V. Raman discovered the Raman effect, was subsequently demolished by the institute people.
That is
and
tragic.
I think they sold it off and something, and then they moved somewhere else, blah, blah, blah.
No respect for heritage.
Nothing. That's the rule. If you go to America, UK and all that, when there's a famous discovery, discoverer of nylon, discoverer of Teflon, the labs where they discovered this is given a heritage plaque.
It's an inspiration for students.
And in fact, the American Chemical Society has come and put this heritage plaque for Raman's thing. But it is put in a new building where he did not do that work.
I see, I see. That is
that old lab, by the way, talking about royals, that old lab where Raman discovered that Raman effect is called the Vijayanagaram Labs.
Okay.
Because the Maharaja of Vijayanagaram gave the money.
I see, I see.
To set up that lab over there in Bau Bazar.
Okay.
So it's still called, it used to be called Vijayanagaram Labs. So you look at these Maharajas. If you look at Jadavpur University, the Maharaja of Tripura in 1906 gave 60 lakhs to start this Jadavpur.
I see.
You look at Jadavpur today.
Oh, it's a mess.
Beating up the governor and this and that. See, so where is 60 lakhs? Where is this beating up the governor?
This was not why he started the institute.
This is not at all why he started. Nobody knows what is Tripura.
Yeah.
From Tripura he came and he gave the 60 lakhs.
Indeed.
You can see that plaque in Jadavpur.
Because he had some vision for the country,
so
right?
So whether it is the Mysore Royals or the Tripura Royals or the Vijayanagaram Royals, these people were all dharmic fellows.
Yes, agreed.
And what I need to see really is much more dharma in our ruling classes today.
It's not there today.
It's not there, zero.
Yes.
Something here, there, you know, just bargaining for some bhindi and tomato in some vegetable market. It has come down to that. So you see this, that's why I do believe that some of the youngsters should see this program, look at the institute.
Yes.
See how it was started, the fact that we've still not collapsed. It is very, very rare for a scientific institution to last 125 years in this country.
Why was this institution started? For creating the scientific community in India?
Yes. It was called, original name given to it was Imperial Indian University.
I see.
I believe Curzon removed the word Imperial and said Indian Institute of Science.
Okay, good.
So that's, you know, lots of bad things are said about Curzon, but I'm told
this is one of the good things.
One of the good things he did. He removed that word Imperial.
So at that time.
And he was supposed to be an imperialist of the highest order.
Of the highest order.
Divided Bengal and doing all those
he
things.
He did
that
those
same
things.
Curzon.
Yes.
That fellow. he made this particular change.
So at that time, we did not have any corpus of scientists in India, right?
Nothing. Nothing, zero.
I see.
They just had to start picking and then they found a few people and see, somebody like Maurice Travers is of such a high level that automatically he will attract other people.
Okay.
I suppose you know one of the reasons, this I think people should know. One of the reasons that Raman fought with the institute authorities is, you will remember in the early 1930s, the Nazi propaganda against Jewish scientists started.
Yes.
Which then ultimately led to the Holocaust.
Yes.
Now, at this time, Max Born, a German physicist, one of the leading lights of quantum physics of those days.
Yes.
He was a Jewish professor who had lost his job. And simply with a letter, Raman invited Born to come as a professor to the institute.
Oh, here?
Yes.
I see.
Bond came
okay.
with his wife.
I see.
And I believe spent even 5-6 years in the institute. And this is where the problem started with the administrators and Raman. Mm-hmm. They said you can't invite him
unless
we go through our regular selection committee procedure, put advertisement, and then let all the candidates come. Otherwise, there'll be a legal battle. So let us sit and do the selection. Selection has to be done only on a working day. It cannot be done on a holiday. Otherwise, somebody will go to court. So they started saying similar things.
It's a very familiar story.
It is totally familiar, which means that, you know, this mentality of ours, this Babugiri, it's not matching the personality of C.V. Raman.
Yes.
And Max Bond.
Yes.
Max Bond, subsequently, he moved to England.
Okay.
He went to Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. Because, again, in the anxious days before World War II, and he spent the rest of his career in UK.
Mm.
And he got a Nobel Prize in 52-53.
Yes, for the Bond rule.
Yes.
Yes.
So the thing is that he was actually here. There is another name which I should mention in connection with the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an architect by the name of Königsberger.
Mm-hmm.
And he was similar. He had built many neoclassical buildings in Berlin in the 30s.
I see.
And again, as a Jew, he was forced out.
Okay.
Where did the Diwan N. Madhav Rao say? He called Königsberger to Bangalore.
I see.
And he has built and designed not only many buildings in this institute, but also several wonderful landmarks in Basavanagudi and all that in South Bangalore.
I see.
So these buildings of Königsberger still exist in Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, there has to be a certain... No, suppose somebody had asked the Diwan, why are you calling him?
Mm.
Is there not a better person?
Yes.
For what you are paying him, can somebody do a better job?
Yeah.
Again, L1. Mm. What I call this L1 mentality,
mm-hmm.
it has to go from Indian side.
Yes.
There is no other way about it.
I completely agree, sir. There is too much interference from non-scientists in science, and they are trying to take control. And it's always about power and control.
See, once again, I'll say, those people are not bad people.
They're not bad.
They like to follow the rules as given to them.
They worship the rule book.
It's a question that is all external form is okay.
Mm.
Internally, there is zero.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientists are the ones who can provide the internal content.
Yes.
A visionary like Bond, like Travers, like Raman.
Mm.
Another very famous director I must mention in this context is Sir J.C. Ghosh.
Okay.
He was director for a long time here in the pre-independence era, and he was the person who founded IIT Kharagpur.
I see.
I'm mentioning chemistry people. He was also a very famous inorganic chemist.
I see.
And he's rightly revered even today in Bengal. Not many people outside Bengal remember the name of Sir J.C. Ghosh.
Okay.
Gyan Chandra Ghosh. So he was another person, and he was here. He was director. And since he was doing such a good job, they said that, come on, B.C. Roy said, we are starting this new IIT Kharagpur.
Mm-hmm.
So you please come as the founder director.
I see.
And many people still feel that among the IITs, IIT Kharagpur is the best.
I see.
I think it's perhaps the largest.
I see.
And it was the only one that was set up without foreign collaboration.
Okay.
You know, Madras, Bombay, Delhi and Kanpur were set up with varying degrees of foreign collaboration.
Okay.
You know, Madras from the Germans, Delhi from the English, Bombay from the Russians and Kanpur from the Americans.
I see.
But Kharagpur is completely indigenous.
I see.
And it is largely to do with J.C. Ghosh.
Okay.
So once again, you see all these people were there. And I think they were given a free hand.
Mm.
This free hand, and above all this atrocity of taking working scientists and making them administrators in Delhi, I think more than anything else, this has ruined the whole show.
Right.
Because these people, I mean, I know many of them, they are all decent folk.
Yes.
But then they neither fit here nor fit there. That's another beautiful thing about higher level science.
Mm.
It's quite international.
Yes.
And you see, you have people from different countries, different backgrounds, totally different cultures,
yes,
different kinds of lives that they lead.
Yes.
And yet, when they come and start talking science,
Abhijit,
it is exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same.
the way we do science, is different.
Yes.
But what we do or the goals we strive for,
yes,
are exactly the same.
So you feel that sense of camaraderie,
yes,
right?
Yes. In fact, people joke with me and they say that I go to these conferences and much of the time I'm not listening to the talks, or I go away from the talks.
Mm.
This is because I'm in walks like this with my colleagues who have come to the meeting.
Yes, that is where the actual productive work happens.
Ha.
The cross-pollination of ideas.
We scientists, I tell you this,
we are not
talkative in public.
Not in public.
We are uncomfortable with going there in public, but we are very talkative with each other.
Right.
Once you recognize another scientist as being in your peer group.
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, there is an important conference in the world called Gordon Research Conferences in America.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the rules in that Gordon conference is that nobody is allowed to take notes.
Okay.
And nobody is allowed to publicize anything that they might have heard from some other scientist in that conference.
I see.
So this is to ensure that only the ideas get discussed.
Okay.
And nobody can that way, you know, this is a very unique concept.
Mm-hmm.
We need more such things.
We need more of that, the informal kind of settings.
We need these such settings and stuff like that.
Yes.
And yes, you are quite right. Scientists do love to talk when they walk. We are actually walking our talk.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Really. Because
I personally think better when I'm walking. I can't sit and think. It's not possible for me.
I know. It's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult. So, but this is, I think we need somehow, I don't know. I keep coming back to this again and again. Today I've sort of got into this mood to talk about scientists and administrators.
Yes.
Something is terribly wrong.
Yes, it is.
In the way in which, because don't forget in the end, we are still not a very rich country.
Yes.
We cannot afford to throw too much money here and there on science.
Yes, there has to be prudence.
Unless we know what we are doing.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So when Maharaja says, let's do that sandal oil thing.
Hmm.
He is not a scientist.
Yeah.
He somehow realized, then there was all these logs of wood lying there.
Yeah.
But he was enough of a businessman to think that, you know, there might be something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, this is something which I feel is sorely lacking in our country.
What needs to happen is that actual genuine scientists need to be given certain sums of money and do what you will with it. Use it for science and let them decide. Give them carte blanche to use that much money.
I wouldn't even mind telling the scientist, this is the particular problem you have to solve.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay,
yes.
this, not just blue sky research, but this is a particular problem you have to solve.
Mm.
If you can't do it in 3 years,
then you're done.
Bus, it's down.
Yeah.
This project is over.
That's what DARPA does.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, what happens today is some of our scientists, including our so-called high and mighty, they catch some idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then this will go on and on and on. Okay, we're coming something interesting came. Okay, chalo, let's give him a little bit more to continue. It looks like the work is at a very interesting stage.
Right, yes.
This is how the people will talk.
Yeah.
I think this is, then it goes on cradle to grave.
Yeah. It should be a limited time frame, 2-3 years.
There has to be time limits on these problems and programs, because what is important today may not be important 5 years from now.
Yes. Dedicate yourself intensely. 3 years and that's it.
You're done.
Whether it works or not doesn't matter. But you get the money and that's it. Three years.
I don't know. I mean, we have still a long ways to go.
We have to shake up the entire system the way it's done. Things are done.
Simply standing outside in the public forum and saying we are doing great, our scientists are great, we are very clever. Satya Nadella and Sundar Pichai are earning high salaries.
They are working for somebody else.
It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove anything.
It proves that Indians are intelligent. That's all.
Then from the scientist side.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I will be equally critical with my own tribe.
Okay.
You know, usually you write a paper.
Hmm.
Yeah. Suppose you are in this applied research. You write a paper.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a patent on it.
Yes.
Then you make a lot of money on the patent or your institution makes.
Mm-hmm.
Then finally, when it's all big and nice, then you go to the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
The newspapers will come to you in that stage,
mm-hmm.
at that point.
Yes.
Now, what do our scientists do today?
Mm-hmm.
They do something or don't do something in the lab, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They first go to the newspaper.
Okay.
Mm. The rest follows.
I see.
So then the question of whether there's going to be a paper, is a vague one. There may be a paper. Of course, I leave you to answer whether there will be a patent on this ever. Forget that the patent should get licensed.
Yes.
We are told Indians are writing so many patents. how many of these patents are getting licensed.
That's the main thing.
How many are making money from whoever, that institution.
Yes.
And then don't start saying like some babu that a company should not become rich.
Company should become rich. Yes, absolutely.
I have seen and heard of so many projects where some babu has sat and said, I believe, oh, if we do all this, the companies will become very rich.
And what's the problem with that?
I don't know.
What do they have against that?
What? See, I am probably not a very clever person. So, I do not know what is the reason.
If the companies become rich, the country becomes rich. The country prospers, everybody gets jobs. What's
the
problem?
It would seem obvious to some people, but I don't know. But, but I hear more and more and more of this kind of talk at very high levels, Vijay. I'm not talking about, you know, some small fry doing this and that. Very, very big things where some policy decisions and all will... There's still too much of this. And we scientists, are, at the end of the day, maybe the fault is also... We are very different. We're very different. And some the governments have to be able to empathize and sympathize with us. That most of the Indian scientists are really trying to do something genuine.
Yes, I agree with that. Yes.
Most. I tell you that. It is only the system and the circumstances that have made many of us into cabbages.
May I ask a question? How do you define a scientist? From, let's say you have a professor. Is every professor a scientist?
Certainly not.
Certainly not. That's the thing. So most scientists, actual scientists, are trying to do something. Most professors may not be doing something.
most professors may not be doing anything. Yes. I think they've become very... self-satisfied.
There is very little emphasis on research.
Another thing, the research, the salaries and all of these professors in central universities and in central institutions is way too high. And we are overpaid and in a sense underworked.
Yes.
There has to be little more self-accountability in all this.
Yes.
You know, what's the use of all this if all that the guy wants to do is to come in the morning and go to the canteen and start eating vadas.
Have a nice time.
Vada coffee, ashte. Lusako. If you have that vada and coffee, he's very happy. And then he'll dream about pakodas and coffee in the afternoon.
That's it.
That is his aim in life.
So we need to identify and promote the right people.
Correct.
That's what needs to happen.
Correct.
Maybe that process is broken.
Did it ever happen? Was it ever there?
It was never there, right?
I don't think it was there. Yeah. I'm mentioning all these fights of Raman and all these people. I don't think it was ever there.
Right.
It's just become the administration more rigidized and regimentalized. That you're facing this vast bureaucratic monster.
Yes, it's and that's what's stifling the growth of science.
So even you appoint some young people who are very good. After 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
They'll be part of the system.
The dirty crowd in that. They just get fed up and switch off.
They'll switch off or they'll leave somewhere.
They'll switch
go somewhere
off
else.
Or they'll do something routine.
Yeah.
Otherwise they'll leave, they'll go back to America. I don't know what they do. Let's go upstairs to a very, very interesting spot.
Yes.
Let's take a peek into this room. This was electrical technology.
I see, this one.
Or it was a library. In that case, the library was up here and electrical technology was down below, or the other way around.
Okay.
So there were just two halls like this. I mean, look at the scale in which this whole thing was conceived.
Yes.
Thinking big.
Thinking big is the main thing, isn't
thinking
it?
Thinking big. Yeah.
Yes.
So after what? 108 means about 114 years it's been going on.
Yes.
And so, Abhijit, I think we are reaching the end of our journey.
Right.
And we can look at the statue of the great man again.
What a beautiful view.
Perspective, at least trying to look him in the eye and seeing if... whether he would be disappointed, happy, what he would think of all of us today.
I'm not sure he would be very happy.
I don't think he'd be that happy.
Hmm.
That's my feeling. Now, since I've come on the program, I will be quoted.
These things need to be said.
No, they have
nobody
to be
is
said.
Willing to say these
look,
things.
Look. this was primarily set up as an institute rather than a university.
Yes.
Because when they called it the Indian University or whatever it is officially, technically speaking, what is called a deemed university, because we have students and we turn out degrees.
Mm.
But there are other places like this in the rest of the world.
Mm.
The two that come to my mind and the two places which I am very familiar with, having been there often and having talked to many of the scientists there,
mm-hmm.
are the Weizmann Institute
Israel.
In Rehovot, mm-hmm. Israel,
mm-hmm.
and the ETH in Zurich.
Okay.
Eidgenössisches Technisches Hochschule.
Okay.
I don't pronounce the German very correctly, but ETH is what it is called.
Mm-hmm.
These were also set up like research institutes.
Okay.
With the small student component.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, when I say that small student, these places did not indulge in a large amount of undergraduate teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Undergraduate teaching is something that's come to the IISc only recently.
I see.
So it was considered that there should be certain places within the general science thing, which are not outright research labs, like the government labs and so on, of DRDO and, you know, space, and those are regular labs.
Yes.
But there is some halfway house between a regular university and a full lab with no students.
Right.
And those were these research institutes.
Hmm.
So IISc, Weizmann and ETH are in this category. Oak Ridge National Lab,
okay.
in America.
In the US, yeah.
That is again a typical example with a nice umbilical connection with the Department of Atomic Energy of America.
Right.
So that's also another institute that comes to mind.
Hmm.
Then there is a Pacific Northwestern Lab, which I think is more of a in Oregon,
okay.
which has more of a research component.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, if you look at ETH and look at Weizmann, then I will say we are nowhere.
Okay. Comparatively.
I have to compare, no?
Yes, of course.
Finally, I have to say, am I better than this fellow? Am I worse than this
Absolutely,
fellow?
Yes.
So, the kind of the sentiments that guided the people when they started these three places was totally the same.
Right, yes.
Weizmann, I mean.
Yeah.
Chaim Weizmann was the person who discovered fermentation technology, which saved Britain in World War II.
Right.
And that's why he was the first president of Israel.
Mm.
And the British literally gave him, you know, sort of Israel like a gift and made him. He is the person who's a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
One more chemist. So he started the Weizmann Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And see, finally, when Ada Yonath gets the Nobel Prize after 50 years, she's a person who was a student and then a researcher and everything in that place.
Right.
And it's very strange. When you walk through the Weizmann, it reminds you of IISc.
I see.
So the ethos and everything is somewhat similar.
Mm-hmm.
And then one asks, what they can do, how come we have not been able to do?
Mm-hmm.
ETH, of course, is older and it has got a galaxy of Nobel laureates.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, it is something that these people have got which we don't have.
One thing I see is that when you go back to the birth of quantum mechanics, we had people like Niels Bohr, Max Planck, Heisenberg. These were all youngsters in the 20s. Niels Bohr was given an entire institute like this when he was around 30 years old.
Mm.
We don't have that system in here.
We don't have that system. For example, Raman, when he was asked to become a professor in Madras University, in the anxious years for Raman when he was not very pleased here, and he was looking for a place, I think, to go. The Madras University asked him, and he said, no, I can't come, but I've got a young student called Ramachandran. He's 28 years old. You please take him as a professor.
Okay.
They appointed him.
I see. It was done.
No selection committees, no, you know, experts.
Right.
Coming, aeroplane, coming, going.
Yeah.
Expert has come, expert has not come.
Mm.
They have appointed him.
Right.
G. N. Ramachandran went there and he got the structure of collagen and the Faisai plot.
There you
which
go.
Is today called Ramachandran plot.
Right.
Right. With that he missed a Nobel Prize and all, I don't care. Doesn't
okay.
matter.
That's
Nobel
fine.
Prize missed him.
He did, yeah.
He it doesn't matter. It's not technical.
Yeah.
Only because you got a Nobel Prize doesn't mean you're good.
Absolutely, yeah.
But Raman said, 28 years old, take him as a full professor. They took him.
That's how it should be.
Today will any 28-year-old fellow is trying to get into a JRF to start a PhD.
That's what's happening in India and that's where everything is failing.
I say, look, they have prime ministers who are under 40.
Yes.
Here and here we have put some fellows, only if you are above 70, you qualify for anything in this country.
This culture has to go.
It must go. It must go not only from, just because you are old, it doesn't mean you are gold. I think on that note,
yes, sir.
Let us stop it and pay homage to this great man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for this talk. Wonderful talking to you. I could speak for hours, but we'll stop
Abhijit,
here.
Abhijit, that's nice. But anyway, I'm glad that, as I said, for the first time, you're making a venture into a live podcast.
Yes, sir.
So now we are waiting to see many more of these in many other areas.
Thank you,
science,
sir.
Tomorrow it will be some other endeavor.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.